Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John, first and foremost.
Good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, indeed, as ever. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032, and I'm actually indebted to a couple of our emailers. We got a couple of emails during the week. Two of them refer to the podcast and the fact that they weren't available for the month of April. But that matter is being looked at, and I know tonight's program is being recorded for future podcasting. So, first of all, thank you to Will in a place in Spain called Albacete. I don't know if I have the pronunciation right, but thank you very much. A town called Helen in Albacete for bringing that to my attention. And also, on a similar note, I also got an email from Pádraig Bonnie. Don't know where he's writing from. It should be nice to know what part of the universe you're in, Pádraig. But, about the podcast and the show, but there's some problem with the logger. It is being looked at, and tonight's program is being recorded for future podcasting. And I'm not sure, but you should be able also to get it on astronomy.ie. There's a little link there on the left-hand side, I think, of the main page, where they also, our good colleagues there, namely James Sweeney and Conor Lennon, do a bit, record the show and put it up on astronomy.ie as well. So you could get it there, but we should be back in order to. And just before we get on with John's What to See in the Nighttime Sky, just a reminder I got to about the astrophotography competition that's coming up to the closing date for that, which is, let me see, closing date is Friday of this week, the 28th. So we did mention it a few weeks ago, John, and I won't go into too many details, but if you go to the website, reachforthestars.ie, nothing got to do with S Club 7, I'm happy to report, you'll get the information there about how to enter, when to enter, and all nice little prizes there too. And it's organised by DIAS and those good people who also look after Dunsink Observatory. Anyway, getting on with the matter in hand, the night sky such as it is, now that we have a grand stretch in the evenings and in the mornings too, I'm sure you've noticed.
Yeah. Speaking about this morning, I just happened to be up about 3:10, normally raiding the fridge or something, but it was particularly clear this morning, and I love to see the different shapes of where the plough goes across the sky around the North Pole, etc., with Cassiopeia and that as well. I just happened to look up just around 3:15 this morning, and the space station came into view. Now, I didn't know that. I'm just lucky that way. I just go out and look up naturally, I think. So that was good fun as well. Now, talking about the space station, back in our evening skies, May 12th to 28th, it has passed tomorrow morning, actually, at 5:06. Yeah.
And not a great pass. The passes get better a bit later in the week, but they are at rather unsociable hours.
Yes, yeah, they sure are. If you're a Lyrid meteor shower hunter, we've just gone through the peak, actually, on the 22nd, but there's still a few knocking around until the 29th of April, which is 3 days away, where we pass across the tail of, which one is it? I can never remember this one. Thatcher, G1 Thatcher. Yep, that's the one. C1861G1 Thatcher, which was discovered back in 1861. Mercury, unfortunately, lost in the sunset. You did get to see it Was it last week or the week before?
I believe I copped. Yeah. I think it was Good Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
I was down the country, down in Carlow, and it was a lovely clear sky across the River Barrow, and I could see. Mm-hmm. And according to the map, or not the map, but the app, I should say, that I had on my phone, which wasn't. So it wasn't one that tracked the star, but according to that, anyway, I could just catch a glimpse of what I believe was Mercury. Now, I know for a fact I had seen it in the past on another occasion when I had a rather good guide who was a nice one of those good pictures in that Astronomy Orla magazine, actually. And I picked it out and, yeah, I could see it. Well, this was very, fairly dim, though. I'm going to say I convinced myself I saw it, but I did see it, but that was with the naked eye too.
It's a hot planet too, facing the sun, and a cold one not facing the sun. It doesn't spin that quickly either. So anyway, it's lost in the sunset at the moment. Venus is the one to watch just at the moment, -4.1 in eastern Taurus.
Did you see it last night or the night before? Close to the moon.
Yeah, fantastic. Lovely. A big thumbnail of a moon. I love seeing that. And that was quite high in the sky at the time too as well. So there we go. It's the brilliant evening star. And it appears in the west during and after dusk. And it doesn't set until 2 hours after full dark as well. So, a fine sight. It's 69% sunlit at the moment. A couple of weeks ago it was 80-something percent. So it's fading a little bit as well. Mars is crossing central Gemini this week. Now it's still an okay sight to see. And it's, if you're looking at Gemini, the two stars, Castor and Pollux, it's over to the right. It sort of splits them in the middle. If you were to join the dots, it'd make a triangle as well. So look for it high in the west in the early evening and then a little lower later as well. Jupiter is unfortunately out of sight and very deep in the glow of sunrise. Saturn, the same. It's low in the east, southeast at early dawn. And unfortunately, Uranus and Neptune are also out of sight. So we only really have Venus and Mars just at the moment, but they will come back into our skies again, which will be very interesting as well. And as I said, you will get to see a couple of the meteor showers, the Lyrid meteor shower bits. Not too many left, although they're still out there. We're passing through we've gone through the peak on the 22nd, so it'll be around for another 3 days or so. We might need Alan tonight because we were watching you and I. We're watching.
He's been on.
That's good.
I'll talk to you about his text in a moment. Is there anything that man doesn't know?
Yeah. There we go. And we were watching at about 20 to 6 this evening.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I got my Ben alert 3 minutes to landing. And it was quite remarkable to see because you were given the office that they all sit in and all with you can see the tension. And they had the simulator on the screen as well because they couldn't see. Now, why they didn't put a camera onto the unit itself, I don't know. Maybe they did, it wasn't working anyway. It looks like it's lost, unfortunately, because they haven't been able to communicate with the Japanese moon lander.
Yeah, that was about 20 to 6.
Yeah, just
when
about
it was supposed to land. And then
we were given
that they were waiting for confirmation from the lander itself that it's down and everything is working okay. Mm-hmm. But
we haven't had anything.
At quarter past six, 35 minutes later, I hadn't heard anything, and I think
the news
kind of gave up. Well, they haven't quite given up, I think. They gave up for today, anyway.
It's still a bit dim, the news at the moment as well, and we can't see it just from in here at the moment because we're doing other stuff. But if we hear any news at all, we'll be the first to tell you. The other thing is, this morning as well, it's amazing how the astronomy creeps around the radio station here. Helen Dubois this morning with the Live Drive program and Paul, they were discussing, I actually missed the little insect because I had to go to work, unfortunately, but it was on the way in. And they were discussing the supernova of Betelgeuse and what was going to happen. So we're going to just check that. There's nothing, as far as we know, that's happened, but it will happen. It won't be any danger to us. It will light up the sky a little bit. You, in fact, need to be 50 light years away from a supernova before it will affect us. So it's 400 light years away, so it's a good way away. So if it does go supernova, and maybe it will in our lifetime, we just don't know. Maybe it won't, maybe it'll wait a while, but it is coming up to the end of its life. and it is 400 light years away from us just at the moment. So maybe it's
happened. Should be safe enough, all right. But actually, it was only today I was reading. You mentioned that figure. You're safe within 40. If you're beyond 40, but I was reading some today. Some new research suggesting that you might need to be at least 160
light years away.
Light years away. Not that there's that many potential supernovas and that near to us.
But so if it hasn't blown up at this stage, it would have taken 400 light years to get here. I think we're pretty safe before we are in any danger whatsoever. And just talking about danger, will the world or the Earth last forever? As we know, everything has a beginning and has an end, but the Earth will last for a very long time yet. And its end will become billions of years after anyone who is alive here now is gone. So we don't have to worry about that either. So at the moment, it's 4.6 billion years old. And it formed from a giant cloud of gas and dust in space, which is called a nebula. And the atmosphere of the Earth didn't contain any oxygen at the time, so it would have been, I suppose, like Venus in a way, toxic to human beings, and if they had been present then. And where did the oxygen come from? Well, microbes seemingly are one of the big things that contributed to this, and the scientists believe that the atmospheric oxygen started to rise about 2.4 billion years ago in a shift they call the Great Oxidation Event. How about that? That's pretty good, isn't it? Little tiny little organisms which don't need an awful lot were admitting oxygen into the system. So at this stage, we have billions of years to go, so don't worry about it. So we have probably 13 million human lifetimes to go before the Earth disappears, which is about 5 billion years from now. The sun will come to the end, of course, as well, and swallow us all up. And It's mind-boggling what will happen, but we won't need to worry about that whatsoever. So there we go.
Thank you for that, John. I was just mentioning Alan. He reliably informs me that our emailer, Will, who lives in Helen in the town of, he says the correct pronunciation is Albacete.
Albacete, very good.
SETI, as in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Well, it's nothing to do with that, but that, but that's how you pronounce it. And he wants us to give a shout out.
Yeah.
Oh, he said it was voted by Lonely Planet as Spain's worst town to visit. Oh my goodness, I shouldn't have said that. Only claim to fame besides football is the quality of knives manufactured. What's that got to do with astronomy? But speaking of football, he said that Andreas Iniesta was from in around that area.
Yeah.
So the guy who scored the only goal in the final of 2010. Is there anything Encyclopedia Alanica
doesn't know?
And finally, the shout out to, he wants to give us a shout out to Ilanos Godris Medrano. I hope I got that pronunciation right. Who worked with him some years ago. Now lives in Valencia. A lovely woman, he says, from Albacete.
There you go. That's nice. All right. Russia is still going to use the International Space Station until 2028. They just said this on Wednesday. Last Wednesday, it's planned to use the ISS in an apparent reversal of an earlier announcement, of course, to quit the orbiting laboratory after 2024. So that's good news as well. So I'm glad to hear that. And in July last year, Moscow said it was leaving the International Space Station after 2024, but things seemingly have changed. So the head of the Russian space agency, Roscosmos, this is Yuri Borisov, said Moscow's participation in the ISS project had been extended. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. That's good news too. Don't think that they're going to live in it much longer than 2030, really, now at this stage, because it'll be quite old. But you never know. Well, they might just take out a few bits and repair it and stick up another couple of bits onto the system.
Well, if it cost $100 billion to build. Of course, not all paid for by the states. Of course, the Russians and the Canadians and the Europeans, of course. Now, just going back to the night sky, there was an aurora alert for a couple of nights there. There was strong emissions from the sun. coronal mass ejections. I didn't see them. It was clear last night. No. I had a look out, but I didn't see anything from my relatively light-polluted suburban neighbourhood. But there was also alerts the previous couple of nights, which are much stronger or a greater chance of seeing some aurora. But unfortunately, where I was, it was cloudy.
Yeah, and I don't know of anyone. Seemingly one of the persons in the office today was watching the BBC News this morning and said that it was seen in the UK up north a bit, and it was extremely purple, and that's an unusual colour for aurora. But I didn't see it like yourself, Ben, because it was just a bit cloudy.
Yeah. And speaking of clear skies and such like, if it is clear, you should be able to see the moon at the moment. We have a 31% waxing crescent moon up at the moment. It will set in the early hours of tomorrow morning, just about 3:15 tomorrow morning. It will increase then to 34%. You'll see that little bit extra of it. And when it rises again tomorrow at 9:41 a.m, another little bit will be on view, 36% of it indeed, as we head towards the first quarter moon on Thursday the 27th, which will be the furthest and therefore the smallest first quarter of the moon in 2023, at a distance of 404,199 kilometres. If it is clear tonight, you should be able to see Mars. That's that object which is about 4.5 degrees to the lower left of the moon. 4.5 degrees, just about to the width of two fingertips, is it? About arm's length. And on Thursday, if you are a moon watcher, with the first quarter moon, you'll be able to see the X and the Y. I don't know. Have you ever seen these? I have looked for it. The X, yeah.
And I've been told where
I've seen
to look.
Pictures.
I have seen as well, but the timing has to be perfect, because you only get an hour or so either side.
Because it's all light and shade, and it looks like a giant X and a giant Y. But you would need a telescope at the very least, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. Yeah. And it's sort of been around the middle of the Terminators through the moon as well, so it's on the bucket list just to get a view of that, but I have seen pictures of it as well. Now, shall we talk a little
and,
bit?
Just to finish up then, Monday the 1st of May, Mercury is at inferior conjunction, and let's just mention the sunrise. Tomorrow in Dublin is at 6:02, which is 15 minutes earlier than a week ago. Local noon will be at 1:22 p.m. The sun sets at 8:44 p.m., which is 12 minutes later than a week ago. And from then until 9:24, we'll have civil twilight. And from then until 10:15, we'll have nautical twilight. And from then until 11:20 or so, we'll have astronomical twilight. And that's when nighttime officially begins. So we'll have 28 minutes more daylight than a week ago. And tomorrow, another 3:56 between sunrise and sunset, when the time difference between sunrise and sunset will be 14 hours and 43 minutes. Oh, just so you mentioning X's and Y's and shapes on planetary bodies, and we're all familiar with the face on Mars, which better resolution photographs, of course, doesn't look anything like a face. But apparently, there's now based on radar images of Venus, there's a monkey on Venus. Now, I saw the picture, but the image of it, but you need a very good imagination to make out the monkey's face.
Strange. Shall we talk a little bit about this SpaceX Starship thing that happened last week?
The big news last week, really. And
yeah.
We were watching it.
I did see it.
Separate, and I saw it too.
It's remarkable. But
you know what was most remarkable was when they pressed the button to blow it up and they all started cheering. I thought, sure. It wasn't our ideal scenario, but they reckon in many respects it was successful, except for the fact they didn't get into space.
No, that's true. But what was it, a minute and a half or so into it blew up. Now, we were trying to find out during the week, and I think you did find out on this as to why it blew up, or did they press the button, or did it blow up by itself? So it looks like the button was pressed seemingly a number of engines didn't ignite and there wasn't enough power to get it up. So I presume somebody commanded the self-destruct button. But remarkably, the power of this thing was not calculated on the ground just before it took off, because flying chunks of concrete or twisted metal sheets, craters blasted deep into the ground, and the thunderous power from the SpaceX first test flight of Starship frightened everybody. He said it was absolutely terrifying to hear the noise of that thing taking off, and they would have been a couple of miles away at that stage as well. So the debris field was thousands of kilometers away from where it exploded as well. So funny enough, I have a picture of a chap in was it Washington or somewhere like where was it exactly? Padre Island Beach, which was about 7 miles from where the Starship launched. He has a piece of debris in his hand as well. And if you believe to have identified a piece of debris, please do not attempt to handle or retrieve the debris directly. Instead, please contact the SpaceX debris hotline. So this chap, I don't know what his name is, he has a piece, it's only like a piece of polystyrene or something, maybe one of the heat shieldy type things, a big grin on his face. So they're finding bits and pieces of this rocket absolutely everywhere. So seemingly as it took off, it wrecked the place. The launch pad itself wasn't strong enough.
It did great damage. Huge rocket, 120 meters tall.
Yeah.
It only reached 39 kilometers before they pressed the button. And if you compare it to, say, the SLS Artemis 1, which flew recently, Artemis 1 was the most, isn't it, the most powerful rocket to actually go into space. And that, so much more powerful than, say, the old Apollo Saturn V. The Artemis 1 produced 8.8 million pounds of thrust, but that's only half of what Starship, the thrust that, because that generated 16.5 million pounds of thrust, almost twice as much. So the noise, no wonder it did, and it did great damage apparently to, as you say, to the launch pad as well. They decided not to build one of those flame pits that diverts the fire from it. But they thought the special concrete that they used would withstand it, but it even shattered that. So
a day at school.
And but Elon Musk says, yeah, maybe we should have built that water.
I suppose you don't really know until flame, you do these things. So it's
flame diverter.
Yeah.
And he said, would they be ready to launch another Starship in about 1 or 2 months' time?
Which would be great to see as well. Now, just caught this one today. Mars reveals a liquid core, a scientist's measure first seismic waves. Did you catch this?
I did.
Yeah, they've confirmed now that Mars's core is liquid, as seismic wave measurements have given valuable first-time clues about how the red planet has formed. So the findings published in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences show that Mars's core is completely liquid iron alloy, and with a percentage of sulfur and oxygen, unlike Earth's core, which is a combination of the liquid outer core and a solid inner core. It's remarkable, really, isn't it? But we all thought, a lot of us thought, that Mars's core at this stage would have been solid, but seemingly not. So that would be an interesting read if anybody wants to go a little bit into Google world to find out what's gone on in that as well.
Alan said, when you were here last week on your own,
yeah,
I couldn't make it. He predicted that there would be a explosion or it'd be blown up. No?
No.
You don't remember?
I don't remember that. No. No.
Okay.
No.
Not to worry.
No.
Okay. And he didn't see any aurora in his backyard in Kildare either.
No, it's just cloudy down this neck of the woods. Now, I didn't touch on the subject of eclipses last week while you weren't here, in preparation for the 2024 US eclipse. So we have two. We've won this year and one next year. So October the 14th in the US, it's the annular solar eclipse, and it comes in from sort of nearly up as far as Alaska, across sort of Las Vegas direction through the desert and then down. And then, of course, the one you're going to in April 8th in 2024 is the total solar eclipse, which makes you number 4 for this one. And a solar eclipse watcher. What do we call it?
A chaser.
Yep.
Eclipse chaser.
Officially, you've had 3, and that's when you...
Hardly have to be a 3 to be officially called an eclipse chaser.
Yep, so there we go. It sneaks up through Texas, through Indianapolis, and up further than Washington into New York, and into Canada as well, and then across the Atlantic a little bit. Greenland, that sort of area. So we, as the time gets closer, we'll give you a little bit more information on the solar, the annular solar eclipse on October the 14th this year, 2023, and April the 8th, 2024, which is the one that you're going to, which is the total solar eclipse. Mm. An experience not to be missed.
It sure is. Once you've seen one, you will never forget it, and you'll be looking forward to the next one, that's for sure. Alan's tweet, apparently last week, or not tweet, text, he said that, apparently, his text from last week, Elon Musk says that there's a strong likelihood for Starship launch would explode on the pad or crash, like all the prior Saturn 1 to 8 missions.
I think. That's remarkable power in those things.
I suppose first time out. Although they have done wet tests, fire tests.
Of course they do.
But it's a different thing going for the real thing, I suppose. Yeah,
truly terrifying is what the locals, or some of the locals described it as. It must be some noise. Lucky enough, my granddad, going back a number of years, when I say a number of years, probably 30-odd years, when the shuttles were about, he was in Cape Canaveral, and he saw a launch of a space. Oh, that would be fantastic.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. He probably didn't appreciate it at the time, because he was 80-something at the time, just over visiting his son and daughter. So it would have been some experience. But you're about, 3 miles away when it takes off. He said, no, it's something else too. Mm. Yep, so there we go.
Well, you need to be further away from Elon Musk's rocket, apparently. It's even noisier.
Yeah. Now, just before we go, Wanted. New ideas to live off moon resources. This is what they're spreading out into the internet world. Making use of the very first resources of another world would be a major feat for our species, bringing us closer to living in space to stay. But reaching such a milestone will take sustained inventiveness and effort. So they're speaking about using the carbon dioxide water up there to mix with the regolith and things like that, to make cement and stuff like that. So over the years now coming up, they'll certainly get a bit closer to building on Mars. But one of the suggestions is to find one of these hole, you know, these cratery hole type things, and go down and live in them, which would be a natural thing to do as well. Pretty cold, though.
It will be.
Certainly will.
Okay, John, I think that's all the time we have for this week. Yes, better go. Oops. Just trying to wreck the place here. Trash the joint before I go. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Alan, for your text, and thanks to our emailers as well. I say the podcast should be back up and running from tonight, or at least from tonight's program. Our email address is astronomy@wcityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items. And as I mentioned earlier, James Sweeney and Conor Lennon of astronomy.ie, who also put the program up there on the website, astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, Bren Leinart with Threads. 11 p.m., Nigel Wood's World Music of Ear to the Globe. And from midnight till 2 a.m., we have Dave Barry with his program called After Hours and his mix of jazz, blues, and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. And say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.